live to live righteously.
Hey, it's me, Richie T, and it's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 125, kind of a combo episode. In the second and the third block, we talk with Sarah Beard, who is an author and also a cancer survivor. So stick around for that. But in this first block, it was originally going to be a special episode, but I decided to just kind of lump it in here. In the first block, we visit with Brandon Metcalf, an LDS recording producer, recording artist. He records stuff anyway in Nashville, so you can hear about how he was robbed and what he's doing. He's taking his lemons, as it were, and turning it into lemonade. That's the first block, the second and the third block here of episode 125 of The Cultural Hall. It's time for a special episode of The Cultural Hall. On the phone with me right now, I'm assuming from Nashville, Tennessee, based on this story, but I'll let him answer that. It's Mr. Brandon Metcalf. Are you in Nashville?
I sure am, yep. How are you?
I'm doing well. City of more than just country music, I think, gets the reputation for just being kind of a country music, but now more and more kind of a rock town.
It's really cool. There's like a lot of indie rock stuff, there's a lot of really great singer songwriter stuff, and there's also a really cool contemporary Christian kind of music scene as well.
And that's kind of where you come into play. Let me tell you how this whole thing came about. There's a woman who listens to the Cultural Hall. Her name is Jessica. And she said, hey, I found the story. You guys should have this guy in the Cultural Hall and talk to him. And this was the story about Brandon. He came home from work to find that his house had been completely ransacked with over, this says 30,000, but talking to you on the phone before we did this, you said over $50,000 worth of possessions missing, personal keepsakes, important documents, computers, recording equipment, and cash all gone. Boom. In an instant. Then he says, this is from your GoFundMe page. Instead of being angry or bitter, Brandon reminded himself of the other important assets in his life besides the, quote, things that used to fill up his living room, those things being family, faith, friends, all of which have been extremely supportive. And now you're doing this really great project, and that's why we wanted to have you here in the Cultural Hall. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Lifetime member of the church, or are you a convert?
I am a lifetime member, yep. I grew up in the Seattle area and have a great family. I have four sisters and just raised really, really well by my parents. Moved out to Nashville a year and a half ago, and just had moved my studio here from Seattle, where I was producing before. And yeah, I mean, that's the GoFundMe page kind of sums it up. It's been a little bit of a rough patch for sure, but really just trying to stay positive through the whole thing and figure out a good way to channel some of those emotions that I was feeling to do something.
Now,
you know?
how does it come about that something like that is stolen? People broke into your house?
You know, and I don't live in the best neighborhood. I live right downtown in Nashville, and I call it kind of a transitioning area in general. Nashville is showing just so much growth right now. There's so many people moving here. And there's a lot of these neighborhoods that are, you know, a little bit rough, but that a lot of people are moving into because of the proximity to downtown. And you have some real estate investors who are kind of coming in and flipping some of the houses. And so that's kind of where I'm at. And, you know, unfortunately, I was the victim of one of these things. And I know that I'm not the only one that it happens to. Unfortunately, I just happen to have, you know, quite a bit of stuff here for people to take. And also, unfortunately, I didn't have renter's insurance set up. It was just one of those things that was perpetually on my to-do list, and I just kind of never got around to it.
Well, you learned your lesson on that this time, huh?
Yeah. Now it's like, well, everyone's asking, well, did you add it now? And I mean, it's kind of a joke, but it's like, well, why now? Yeah. I don't have anything left in my house, but I will at some point.
Yeah, it sounds to me like you didn't actually learn your lesson, because I'd be insuring my underwear at this point if I had nothing else and I'm looking around going, well, I need insurance on that, because one of these days I'm not going to have anything. I want to ask you about how old are you?
I'm 27.
So did you go on a mission?
I actually did not.
Okay. Was that a thing? Because I know you went to BYU.
I did go to BYU, and going on a mission, you know, I actually haven't really told many people this, but I prayed about it, and my answer was no.
Oh, really?
And, you know, that's something that I really only have shared with a couple of people. And I realize now why that was, but it was kind of a difficult thing.
So were you eager to go? You're like, yeah, hey, I want to go this, but let me find out if it's right. And then it's praying and it's like, no. And you're like, hold on, wait, no, I want to go. Or what was kind of the situation at the time?
Well, the situation was I was at BYU and, you know, obviously, like, really, really excited to just jump into life and start doing stuff, and had always planned on going to mission my whole life, and very, very strong, active member all through my teenage years, like, very, very strong. And so, yeah, I mean, going on a mission was for sure, like, part of the plan. And I guess that, I don't know, it took me back a bit, and, I don't know really any other way to describe it other than that, I guess.
But you say now, looking back on it, you understand why. So what, in retrospect, have you learned about having that be your answer?
Honestly, so part of this whole project is, dedicated to my little sister, and she passed away, and she actually would have passed while I was on my mission. And so that's how the timing would have worked. And you know, I think that is a big part of it. I think that I needed to be there with my family, and there was so many experiences surrounding that whole thing that were really defining for my life, and I think that that's where I was supposed to be at the time. And whether or not after that happened, you know, whether I could have gone or not, I could have. And at that point, I admittedly, I didn't pray about it again, because I had already started working and was, you know, kind of far along in the things that I was doing. And, you know, that's kind of how the cards played out, I guess.
Was there ever a struggle of faith with, I know when a lot of times when people have younger family members pass away, especially with how close, you know, I mean, there's lots of denominations who are close with their families. I won't say Mormons own the copyright on that. But, you know, with how close it is for us Mormon folk with our families, was there ever like a, you know, why God, why this? You know, I wanted to go on a mission and that wasn't the thing. And now you take my sister from me. Was there ever like an anger or a questioning, or was it always just looking forward to the afterlife?
Absolutely not. If anything, it was kind of the opposite of that. If anything, it was a faith strengthening experience that Heavenly Father knows us personally, and that He has a plan. And you know, when I guess he knows, and that whole experience of her passing away was actually incredibly spiritual, and those were some of the moments that I felt closest to God and closest to my family, and when the veil has been so thin, and you know, it wasn't a trial of my faith, I don't think, in that sense at all. I think it was a strengthening kind of experience.
You know, I'm reading over some other stuff too, and I appreciate you sharing all that, especially where you said you haven't shared some of that with too many people. Your DJ nickname was DJ Fade?
Correct.
Do you look back at that now and think of your sixth grade, 13-year-old paperboyish DJ name and just go, or do you still hold strong to, no, I'm DJ Fade?
You know, I still have several friends who call me Fade. They really don't call me Brandon. A lot of people still call me Fade. It's kind of just a joke thing that stuck, and I think it's funny. I don't look back and be like, oh, what was I thinking? I kind of think back and was like, man, I was kind of a cool kid. I was cooler when I was 13 than I am now, that's for sure.
You're like, I had it made. Mom was doing laundry, making me dinner, and I was a DJ. And it's cool. I was looking at this. You had your own business. You recorded your own hip-hop album on a computer and then sampled from some vinyl records. That's pretty rad.
It was a lot of fun. I was a lot different than most other kids my age, for sure. Like, I was always so into music and always just so ambitious and wanting to do stuff and create things. And, you know, while some of my other friends were out, you know, playing in the backyard or whatever, I was inside, like, listening to new music and writing songs and doing that whole thing.
You're like, hey, you know what? I'll make up a soundtrack for while you guys play in the backyard. Hold on. Give me a second. Here it is.
Right.
You know, but most of this is not why we had you here in the Cultural Hall. We want to talk about the project that you're doing now. You're ground zero. Everything is taken. And you've decided to, rather than be really angry about the stuff that was stolen, which, by the way, do they have any suspects? Have they caught anyone? Anything like that?
They haven't caught anyone, and they don't have any suspects. Mm-hmm. And really, I'm not too hopeful that all this stuff will turn out. They did dust for fingerprints, and they did kind of do that whole thing and took a report of everything. But you know, it's so hard to track a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to sit around and just wait and hope that, you know, someday the stuff will show back up. And really, at the end of the day, it's just stuff anyways. And, you know, it's a bit of a setback for sure, but I'm not the only one that it's happened to, and there's no reason for me to sit around and be sorry for myself. I'd rather just get back to work and try to do something good.
So what are you getting to work on?
So the new project, well, I guess, first of all, currently, like I said, I am a music producer. I do a lot of work in a couple of different genres, and this is inspirational and spiritual type music has always been something that I'm so passionate about, like the EFY type records every year and, you know, the Deseret Book artists. And really, there's just not enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's only like kind of a handful of things that are out there. So my new project is called 1117.
And why is that?
That is my little sister's birthday, November 17th. And really just trying to do this whole thing kind of in her name and trying to find some of that special spirit that she had about her and share it with others. And it's a project that's, you know, really dedicated to working with LDS and faith-based songwriters and artists to produce music that will inspire others and help people feel the spirit.
So are you hoping then to have, like, if someone is listening to this and they're like, hey, I'm an LDS musician, are you hoping to have people submit to you? Do you have a bunch of people already? Or, you know, how can people be a part of this?
Definitely open to people submitting, whether it's submitting songs that they've written, submitting themselves as singers or artists, and really looking for people who are specifically passionate about this. What I don't want is people who, you know, want to be a country star, but then they're like, oh, but I would do this instead if, but I don't know. Does that make sense?
No,
I
get you.
I want people who are like, I want to do this. Like, I want to write these songs, and I want to sing these songs and do something that's going to be good for other people.
And there are already, as I'm kind of going through my mind, you know, there are already a lot of LDS artists out in Nashville right now, right?
There are, and I've worked with a lot of them.
Like who?
And I did the last couple of Due West records, if you know those guys. They're a country group, and they're like some of the best guys that I know. They're just so awesome. Jason Deere, who does the Nashville Tribute Band, he's an incredible songwriter, record producer as well. The Truman Boys and their dad, Dan Truman, he plays in Diamond Rio.
Mm-hmm.
And then a handful of other LDS artists and songwriters who are, you know, maybe not as well known, but are very talented that I know just through, you know, either being in my singles branch or you know, in some of the other wards around here.
In my mind, I'm seeing the Singles Branch with the most amazing musical numbers during sacrament meeting. You know what I'm saying?
It's incredible. Also, those Beyond Five boys, that boy band that Tyler Castleton and Russ Dixon put together,
uh-huh.
Those guys are all out here too, and they are, I mean, they're incredible.
Yeah, I just would be like, all right, let's get past the talks. Let's get to the musical number. Come on, let's do this.
Right. Well, it's really, really great for that. And the other thing is there's a lot of really great musicians. So we'll have these sometimes just instrumental, you know, numbers that are just like, they're just incredible. There's so much talent out here. It's so cool to be around all of it.
People have their microphones out and are recording it. They're like, oh, yeah, bootleg. Bootleg copy. No, I don't know where that came from. I don't know. Is someone recording? No, it wasn't me.
Weird.
So people can send stuff to you. How? People can help out with the GoFundMe. How? Tell people the how of helping you out.
That's a good question, actually. Let me think. I'm really not quite prepared for this. I will give out an email that will work for now, and it is songs@destinynashville.com.
So just songs at destinynashville.com.
Yep. And that is an email inbox that somebody kind of sorts through for me and prepares stuff for me to listen to for my normal job, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And if some of this stuff comes in here, I'll just have them sort it out separately for me.
Cool.
So that's if you are a songwriter or an artist and you want me to hear your stuff.
Very cool.
And if you are interested in checking out the GoFundMe page, I don't have the set link right on me. It's kind of a weird link, but you could just search for, it's called Find the Positive on GoFundMe.com.
And what we'll do is at theculturalhall.com, we'll just establish a link along with this episode so people can just go there. Then they don't even have to be like, Google, what? What is this Google? I've never heard of it.
That's perfect. Also put up a link for the 1117 Facebook page so that if anyone's interested, they can like the page and just kind of stay tuned for updates as we have some new stuff coming up.
And that's is it the numerals 11 or is it written out?
It is spelled out 11 and then numbers of 17.
Okay, 11 and then the numbers 1 and the number 7. I want to ask you, we ask everyone who comes into the Cultural Hall a couple questions, so I'll ask you the same. Do you have a calling right now, and if so, what is it?
I am a Sunday school teacher.
For the you're in a singles branch, so for the adults, obviously. If you could invent a calling, or if you could pick a calling or invent one that does not exist, what would you pick or invent for yourself?
Oh, boy. Ward music director, not the one that leads in sacrament meeting, but I guess maybe the one that kind of works with people to pick out and arrange and prepare all of the musical numbers like we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be awesome.
Cool. And then finally, we like to ask people what their favorite part of their faith is.
I think my favorite part is the personal aspect of it, where I know that my relationship with God is a personal thing. And that is not something that only exists when I'm at church. It is something that can exist, you know, every day. And it can be a relationship that exists when right when you wake up in the morning, or it can be when you're driving in the car, or it can be through even things like when you work and you do your job and you do that in a way where you're trying to use your talents to, even just work any job in the world, and you just kind of approach life in that way. I know that we're blessed and that we can do everything in our life, by the power of the Spirit, and I just love that aspect of it.
Well, we hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you will be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, Brandon will be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and joining me is Sarah Beard. That's a, I like, we'll get into that last name because I've, okay. We'll get there. She's a graduate from the University of Utah with a degree in communications and has recently written a book called Porcelain Keys. It's the story of Aria Kinsley, a friendless 17-year-old piano prodigy whose abusive father forbids her from playing the piano. And then she meets Thomas Ashby, who captures her heart and gives her the courage to defy her father and audition for Juilliard. So I'm excited to get into all this. Sarah, let's start with you. Are you a lifetime member of the LDS Church?
I am.
Born and raised, pioneer stock?
Yes. Willard Richards was my great-great-great-grandfather. So yes, I definitely have pioneer stock.
Is that where the beard comes from?
No, the beard is my husband's last name.
Uh-huh.
So, that was one thing that made me really question whether or not I wanted to marry him. No, just kidding.
You can be honest if it was.
I'm kidding. No, my maiden name was MacDonald, and so when I met him and we decided to get married, I was actually pretty happy because it would take me a lot less time to sign my name. It was the fewer letters, so.
Well, and as a kid, if you would have had Beard as your last name, you wouldn't have got, hey, McDonald, and farm, and let's go to.
Oh, yeah. We got lots of prank calls, people calling up, ordering hamburgers and french fries.
Really?
Yeah. And kids asking, is your dad Ronald?
Yeah. So. And you're like, yes, my dad is Ronald.
Yeah.
How did you know? That's, kids are stupid.
They are, but I'm sure if my last name was Beard, I would have gotten teased for that, too.
So. I'm sure. Oh, lady with a beard. Yeah. Oh, is that your beard?
Yeah.
Which is where I was going to go with it. It's always funny when, the whole thing with men and their beards. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is my husband wanted me to use a pen name for my book because he's like, Sarah Beard just isn't romantic sounding enough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very romantic story written by Sarah Beard.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, you almost want to, flip to the back. You're a very beautiful woman. You want to flip to the back, though, and have it be like this very stoic, just, brick lady kind of. That's Sarah Beard.
Right.
So lifetime member of the church, born and raised here in Utah?
Yes.
Okay. So you're living the story then.
I've lived here my whole life. I grew up in West Valley, then went to West Jordan, then went to Murray, then went to South Jordan. Now we're in Holiday. So, yeah, been in the valley my whole life.
Tell me that you've lived somewhere else. Or been somewhere else for a long extended period of time?
I've been on vacations elsewhere, but
okay.
I think the farthest I've been is to England.
So. Okay. Okay. So out of country.
Yeah, yeah. Mexico, England, the Bahamas,
Which isn't necessary. Well, the Bahamas, listen to that.
Honeymoon.
Oh, there you go. Way to go, Mr. Beard.
Yes. It was my idea.
Yeah. Okay, Mrs. Beard. You just told him what to do. He's like, okay, I get how this marriage thing is going.
Yeah, he wanted to go skiing somewhere, and I wanted to go somewhere tropical. It was in the middle of the winter, and so I won.
Yeah. And you've been winning since how long?
10 years. No, 11 years.
Oh, shame on you. Recording, and now he knows.
Yeah, 11 years just last month.
So. You have kids?
Yeah, three little boys. Well, they're getting bigger, but they're 9, 7, and 5.
So. Holy cow.
Yeah, they're a lot of work, but I love them. They're great boys.
And questions that are none of my business. Are you guys done? Going to have more?
We are done. Not by choice because of medical reasons. Uh-huh. I had breast cancer a couple years ago, and just because of everything I had to go through with that, I'm no longer able to have kids.
So we'll get into that a little bit, a breast cancer survivor. That's something that we've actually not, at least as I, in my quick memory, I don't think that we've ever talked about cancer surviving here in the Cultural Hall. And that's a shame because we're over 100 episodes in. So it seems like we should have done that before. What does your husband do?
He's a graphic designer. His official title is art director. He actually works for an engineering company.
Oh, cool.
Doing all of their marketing materials. And he's actually going back to school in the fall to get his master's. So his fine arts, master of fine arts degree. So,
oh, very cool.
That'll be interesting for the next 2 years.
Yeah. And by interesting, you mean a lot of work.
a lot of work.
Three kids and a husband getting his master's is not an easy thing.
Right. So, but I think that it'll be worth it in the long run. So.
Absolutely. Oh, anything that's difficult is.
Absolutely. I agree.
Born, raised here, you went to Granger High School. We talked about that before we turned on the microphones. Go Lancers.
Go Lancers.
I'm a Husky myself from Hillcrest here.
Hillcrest.
In Midvale.
Midvale, okay.
Born and raised Sandy.
So still kind of on the west side.
Technically,
middle,
we were east.
Middle.
Yeah, we were east side, but, if you're claiming anything, I was definitely an east sider.
Okay.
But it was, definitely your middle class.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of rich, wasn't a lot of poor people.
Right.
There were cliques definitely within the high school thing, but it was not, monetary, socioeconomic classes. It was your jocks and that kind of stuff.
Right.
So educated at
University of Utah.
Okay, so that's where the plan deviates a little bit from living in Utah your whole life. BYU should have been the answer to that question, right?
So when I was a teenager, I wasn't actually really active in the church. My family wasn't active for a long while, and so I wasn't your typical Mormon girl with goals to go to BYU, I guess. And I had a boyfriend who went to the U, and so I went to the U too.
Yeah.
So,
hey, you're doing that? All right, I'll do that.
I actually started at the community college, and after hearing him make a lot of jokes about Salt Lake Community College and how it was Redwood High, and it made me feel bad about going there, so I went up to the U. So
just so the jokes would stop. You're like, listen, I'm fine with my education here, but so I don't have to hear these jokes anymore.
Yeah, he wasn't always the nicest person.
So. Salt Lake Community High School. That's not who you married, though, right?
No.
Okay. I was going to say, this is recording. Your husband will hear this. Sorry, that's kind of funny. Family, you said growing up, not necessarily a church-going family. Folks said, no?
My parents were married in the temple. They were sealed after they were married. But so I was born in the covenant and everything. But when I was about three, my dad stopped going to church. He actually got excommunicated. And that's something that, was always hard for me as a child.
Because mom would go to church still after that.
My mom was kind of a workaholic, and she worked on Sundays, and it was kind of actually necessary for, we were a lower class family, and she was a waitress, and she worked at Village Inn for most of my childhood.
Yeah, VI, that's so delicious.
So she had to work a lot of Sundays, and I think that it was also just kind of hard for her to go to church because, I think not necessarily that people were judgmental, but she might have felt just kind of out of place. Because my dad wasn't there with us. And so the funny thing is my parents made my sister and brother and I go to church still every Sunday. And we would go by ourselves. We would actually go to our classes, and then we would go to sacrament meeting, and we would leave right after taking the sacrament just because we just didn't know any better. We just thought, well, we took the sacrament, now let's go home,
Mm-hmm.
But it was always kind of a source of sadness for me as I was growing up, seeing that, my parents weren't there with us, and seeing other families at church that were happy together. And
sure.
And so when I was in junior high, I discovered that my dad had a drug addiction, and I wouldn't talk about this, but my dad is actually really open about it, and it's something that he's overcome. And he
good for him. Congratulations.
He actually is a missionary now in the church's LDS recovery or the LDS addiction recovery program.
Jeez, good for him.
And so he talks about it all the time, obviously. But back to my childhood. So my teenage years, I discovered he had a drug addiction, and so during that time, I didn't go to church because I guess I kind of stopped going to church when I was I would say 15 or so, just because my sister stopped going, my brother stopped going, I was going all by myself, and then there was, I didn't have, I guess, anyone that was super supportive in my ward, which is sad, but I think that I felt like there were a couple of people that were a little bit judgmental of me and that kind of treated me like I was the spawn of the devil, and they saw me outside of church, and I was the type of person back then. I hung out with the bad kids and I wore black all the time. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, wasn't, like I said, I wasn't your typical Mormon girl. And so there were just a lot of people that kind of made me feel unwelcome. And so I just stopped going. And then when I was 19 years old, the singles ward in my neighborhood came and invited me to go to church. So I went, I had kind of been feeling like I wanted to go back to church, and I knew that something really important was missing from my life and that I wasn't really happy with the life that I was living. And so I tried it out. I went to church, and the moment that I walked in that first Sunday that I went to the singles ward, I just had this overwhelming feeling of just love and acceptance. And mm-hmm. it was like, it was where I belonged, you know, and I loved the singles ward because it gave me a place where I didn't feel out of place. You know, there weren't families happily together everywhere sure. in there, you know? And so, but during about the same time, my dad was actually beginning to change. He had finally gotten to the point where he had the desire to overcome this addiction, and he was really trying. And, you know, he was going to NA, Narcotics Anonymous, and he did crystal meth. And,
jeez.
Yeah.
And I only say geez because I know how hard that is to come away from.
Oh, absolutely. He struggled with it for so long, and he would try, and then he would relapse and try and relapse. And so finally he started going to the church's recovery addiction program. And at the time it was a pretty small pilot program, mm-hmm. but he started to really succeed with that. And he still relapsed a few times, but anyway, through a series of events and just through, you know, time, he was finally able to apply the atonement to his life and to overcome that addiction. And he's just a great example to me and to so many people. And, you know, the sad thing is drug addiction and alcoholism, they're still kind of a taboo subject in our church. Like, I know sure. some people and my current ward who have family members struggling with it, and they'll take me aside into a corner and they'll be like, I know that you have a family member that struggles with this. Mm-hmm. And they'll ask me all these questions. And it's just kind of sad that it's this very secret conversation, you know, when so many people struggle with it, so many families are affected by it. And
We need to be more open about it.
Absolutely. And I
mean, you kind of skirt around it a little bit because no one wants to say, hey, this is something that we could do better, but we really need to do a better job about it.
Yeah, definitely. And I like to talk about it and share my dad's story because I think that it can give people hope that, you know, especially with crystal meth, such a hard addiction to overcome. It can give people hope that it can be done, you know, through the atonement. That's really the only way that it can happen. You know, I watched him struggle for years and years, and finally when he just put his will gave his will over to God and just did what it took to apply the atonement to his life. You know, we started getting up every morning, me and him actually, mm-hmm. to read our scriptures every morning
cool.
and to pray and that's that year that we started doing that. That was when he, I think, finally gained the power to really just to finally stop. And then he was able to get rebaptized and to a year later got his temple blessings and his priesthood restored. And
cool.
And as I said, now he's a missionary for the recovery program. So it's turned out really well. So.
It's an amazing example. There are a lot of people, and I don't know statistics on it, but I know that it certainly leans towards not being that case, that you will find themselves excommunicated and then just say, forget it, I'm done.
Yeah, I think it's really hard for people who get excommunicated because, one, they don't have that constant companion of the Spirit with them anymore, mm-hmm. which obviously they probably didn't once they, you know, made the choice that got them excommunicated. But, one, they don't have the Spirit. And then also I think that it takes a lot of humility to come back to church after being excommunicated and knowing that people might be judging you, which mm-hmm. hopefully most people don't, but you know, right. but people just always have that fear, I think, that of what people think of them. And so I think it takes a lot of humility to come back and just a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, to overcome the things that got you excommunicated in the first place. So
it's seeming to be sort of a theme in what you're saying. As far as the judgment goes, I always find it fascinating as with judgment, because it seems like as Mormons, we get sort of bad rap for being judgmental. And there are, believe it. There, yeah. You know, I've met my fair share of, unfortunately, really judgmental people. I don't quantify it as, they're Mormon, henceforth they're judgmental. I think they would be just judgmental Catholics or judgmental Jewish people, but they happen to be very judgmental. But I also am so fascinated by, as you were talking about, your youth and how you felt that you were judged, even though, you know, maybe in some instances you were, but probably by and large, the one doing the most judgment of you was yourself.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. Looking back, I'm sure that people looked at me and felt pity for me, or they felt, you know, I'm sure that they felt love for me, or they wanted me to succeed and they wanted me to stay in the church. Because when I see people at church like that who are struggling, all I feel for them is just overwhelming love. You know, mm-hmm. I want to go wrap my arms around them and say, you know, stay here with us. And, you know, this is where, you know, you're welcome. And this is where you'll find happiness and peace in your life. But I think that, I don't know what it is about us as human beings that we just assume what people are thinking about us. But I like what you said, that we judge ourselves. And so I guess at the time when I was a teenager, I looked at myself and I compared myself to everybody else, you know, to all the other girls in the ward that, you know, had nice families, that went to church. And I just felt like, well, I'm not as good as them because I'm different. You mm-hmm. know,
But the church is better with different people.
Yes.
You know, it makes us better people to have different people in our life. If you have everyone in your life that's the same as you, you are a boring person.
Yeah. In fact, I love the new, the church's I Am Mormon ad campaign and all the different people that they've featured on it. You know, the skateboarders and just the, you know, just people from all walks of life that are just so unique and so different and have different talents and abilities and quirks and mm-hmm. And yet we can all believe the same thing.
Yeah.
So.
Vital.
Yeah.
And then the other part of it too is, you know, I think of your experience and how you struggled through that and how, you know, there are probably people in each of our wards now where we can identify someone that's having a really hard time. And for whatever reason, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe we feel like we don't know them well enough or that it would become across as superficial. But there are people that each of us can affect. You know, mm-hmm. we always think of missionary work as this grand thing, going overseas and building wells or, you know, having to go somewhere else or even having the tag. But, you know, in particular, there's probably just a teenage kid in your ward who is struggling with parents.
Who just needs someone to come wrap an arm around
him. Yeah, and just be like, hey, you know what? It's okay.
Or just say, you're an awesome kid. Yeah. just make them feel like they're worth something. And, you know, and I'm not perfect at this either, but I think that for me, a lot of times I see people that are kind of off by themselves and at times I feel like, well, they wouldn't want me to, you know, they look like they want to be alone or, you know, mm-hmm. they wouldn't want me to come up and talk to them or, it's that fear of, I guess for me, of rejection, which is silly, but the truth is that maybe they're off by themselves because they don't feel comfortable, you know, going and talking to anybody. And so I think for me, my biggest hurdle is just getting over myself, you know, getting over that fear of being rejected or that fear of what people will think of me if I go up to them and welcome them or, you know.
Yeah. So. Interesting side, John. I don't think that I would have thought we would have gone there in this whole thing.
I know.
So you go to school, you follow your boyfriend, who's not a very nice guy, who you didn't marry. to the University of Utah. You study communications.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the plan? You're in college. You're like, this is what I want to be when I grow up.
So I loved two things. I loved music and I loved writing. But because I grew up in a lower class family, I was too afraid to major in either of those things. I wanted to do something that could be more marketable.
Sure.
And so
well, you can't follow that. How are you going to get a job in that thing?
Yeah. So I sadly didn't do either of those things, but I chose communications because you do a lot of writing in mm-hmm. communications, and that's something that I loved. And so I just chose communications, and it's something that you can use for a lot of different things. So in a lot of different areas. And I just felt like if I had that degree that I could, it would open up a lot of different opportunities for me. So, looking back, I kind of wish that I would have majored in English or in literature or something, but I did learn a lot, you know, about writing and about different types of writing. You take a lot of different writing classes with communications, mm-hmm. technical writing and business writing. And I did take some creative writing. And so yeah, journalism.
So was the hope always to be a book writer?
So that's always been kind of a dream of mine that I was, you know, kind of in the back of my head. I think I always knew that I would write a book someday. I just didn't really plan it out. Mm-hmm. And so I think when I was in school, I think that my goal was I just wanted, like, because when I was going through school, I was working like an office job, and I actually kind of enjoyed that. And so I think that my goal was to just kind of keep working in the corporate world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but when I graduated and got married, I got a job with as an office manager. But then when we had kids, it didn't really work because I wanted to be home with my baby. And so I guess that's kind of when I started to rethink what I wanted to do with mm-hmm. my life. And so
kids will make you do that real
quick.
Yeah,
definitely. And so, but it was a couple of years before I really started getting back into, or, well, let me say, I wrote a lot in high school, creative writing, but it was something once I had kids, I kind of put it away for a while just because, you know, having small kids, you're so emotionally drained and overwhelmed, and it just doesn't happen. And so I was staying home with my two kids, and I was actually kind of suffering from some postpartum depression. And I just felt like there was just this one day when I just had this overwhelming feeling to sit down and write something. Mm-hmm. And so I sat down and I wrote out this scene, and it's a scene that didn't even end up in my book, but it's the scene that kind of started the, it, I guess, opened up this story for me that ended up to be Porcelain Keys. But from the first time that I wrote that scene, that's kind of when just like the novelist in me just kind of clicked on from that very first scene. And like, I just became obsessed with the story and with these characters, and I just knew that I had to finish it. And so I worked on it for a couple of years before I got cancer. And then I had, you know, a year that I didn't write at all as I was going through treatments and everything. And then I, you know, kept working on it after that. And it took me quite a while to finish writing it because I really didn't know how to write fiction. I mean, mm-hmm. I felt like I was a good writer when I started writing it, but really I wasn't. Like I there's so many little aspects of writing fiction that unless you study the craft of writing fiction that mm-hmm. you just don't even think about. And so I spent a lot of time just educating myself and improving my craft. And so it took me about, overall, from start to finish, it was 5 years that it took me to actually finish my polished, completed draft manuscript that was ready to send out to agents and publishers.
And you just kind of glossed over the cancer thing. So coming up here in yes. the third block of the Cultural Hall, I want to take a step back a little bit and talk a little bit about that. Coming back in the third block.
We invite you to claim your courage by shedding shameful thoughts, actions, and feelings that disrupt your ability to live authentically or feel connected to others by letting go of fear, blame, and your idea of perfection. The Healing Group, where women go for hope, growth, and healing. We're the home of the Sex Girls. Are you a mother feeling lost in a relationship and feeling stuck? Are you feeling overwhelmed by life? Schedule an appointment now. Can't make it to our office? No problem. Meet with a therapist individually or with a group in our virtual clinic right from the comfort of your own home. Visit thehealinggroup.com for more information.
All right, Sarah, so third block of the Cultural Hall, and I'm sure that this wasn't how it was in your life, so I'm curious as to why we kind of just brushed the whole cancer thing. It's like, so I was really, really involved in a book. I got cancer, and then I finished writing the book and put it together. Let's talk about that experience. Are you open to talking about it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Breast cancer.
Yes, breast cancer.
Fairly common, as I understand it, as far as cancers for everyone, right? For women, it's the number one.
Yes. And, but I was 32 when I was diagnosed, which isn't so common.
Is it usually much older?
Yeah, usually it's much older. And, but people, so I did the genetic testing and it turned out that I had the genetic mutation for it. And I guess that people who have that tend to get it at an earlier age. Mm-hmm. And
how does that come about? How do you find out? I mean, I always hear the horror stories of like, well, I was showering and I was, you know, and then it's like, what is this? And then the husband's gosh. And then it's, yeah.
Well, it was very similar to that, but a little bit different. So I was weaning my 1-year-old. He was almost one and I was weaning him. And so I actually found a lump under my arm first, which turned out to be my lymph node, which the cancer was in, but I didn't realize it at the time, obviously, and I didn't think too much of it because I had had like swollen glands under my arm before when I was battling a cold or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was actually battling a cold at the time. And so I just didn't think too much of it, but then it didn't go away and didn't go away. And a few weeks later, it still hadn't gone away. And then one day I was in the shower and I actually felt a lump in my breast. And so at first I thought, well, I'm weaning my 1-year-old and it's probably just a clogged milk duct or something. But I just had this feeling that I should get it checked out. And so I called my doctor and they had me come in like the next day and they did an ultrasound on it. And then they had me come in the next morning for biopsy. And I wasn't too worried about it. I think most people have the mindset of, you know, it could never happen to me.
No, that's other people. That's who that happens to.
It just seems like such a situation that's just so unreal. And so I just thought, well, it just has something to do with, you know, my milk ducts or whatever. And
interesting too, because especially with at that time and in your life and being like that, I would think you think, you know, so much has gone on with my body that I don't, you have a baby growing inside of it for crying out loud. That's not necessarily something that happens all the time. So it's any number of things that can occur. Hair falls out and it's not, you know, that you're going bald. It's that there's some hormone thing.
Right. There's an easy and benign explanation for everything. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, but as the doctor was doing the biopsy, I just asked him, you know, just kind of like casually, kind of even joking, like, oh, what are the chances that this is cancer, you know? And he just looked at me and he said, well, to be frank, you know, this, it actually does look like cancer just because it's in your lymph node and it's, you know, and
you're
so,
like, let's go back to joking because I liked that a whole lot better.
So that was kind of the moment that I was like, oh crap, you know, this, and it still felt so unreal to me. Like this couldn't happen to me. You know, I'm supposed to live a long life and I'm supposed to, you know, like I have all these promises made to me and my patriarchal blessing and this can't happen to me, you know? And so it took them a few days to get the results back to me, which was the most, you know, just.
Yeah. Hang tight.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Those were just probably some of the worst days of my life, just waiting for the results. Just going back and forth. I have cancer. No, I don't have cancer. Oh, I do have cancer. I don't have cancer, you know? Just the emotional turmoil of that. And so anyway, so finally my doctor called me one night and told me that I had cancer and that it was an aggressive type and that he did not say very encouraging things to me.
How does that phone call go, by the way?
Oh, man, it was awful. So he called and he said, you know, sorry it took me so long to call you and I wanted to wait until I had more information before I called you. And
your mind in that time is going, more information? What do you mean more information? Like,
I know.
I'm sure the second that you see who it is. It's...
Oh, yeah. As soon as, because I had waited so long and because I had actually called the doctor's office that day to see like why it was taking so long. Mm-hmm. And they were like, I think he's going to call you a little bit later. I knew like because they're not calling me and not calling me, I just knew. And so anyway, so he called and anyway, so he said, you know, I think he just said point blank, it is cancer. And I just started crying, and my husband was standing next to me, and I just looked over at him and I mouthed, you know, I have cancer. And he started crying, and then the doctor started giving me all the details, and I'm just like crying and trying to write all these things down that he's telling me that mean absolutely nothing to me, and all these terms that just, I don't even know what they are. And so, but yeah, one of the words on there was like aggressive, and like, I can't even remember all the words, but it was just anyway. And he said, yeah, so it doesn't, oh, and he said, it doesn't look good. So
thanks, doc.
I know, but he did say, but you know, we should have hope that you can beat this thing. And so after that, it was just like this whirlwind of like meeting with doctors and trying to figure out a plan and trying to figure out what we were going to do. And usually, at least in the past, what they've done is they've done a mastectomy first and chemo after. But because I still had some breast milk remaining, they wouldn't do a surgery until I was all dried up.
And oh, really?
So, yeah. And so but I wanted to do something right away. Like, I could not wait 4 weeks, knowing that cancer was growing and spreading in my body, you know. And at that point, I didn't even know if it had spread beyond my lymph node or not. Mm-hmm. And once it does, it's pretty much incurable. And so, anyhow, getting back to, the treatment plan. So I met with an oncologist that said that we could do chemo first and then surgery after. And so I agreed to do that. And I'm actually really glad that we did that, because I had a complete response to the chemo. And so by the time I did the mastectomy, the cancer was all gone. So I
really?
Had, yeah. And so that actually increased my chances of survival from like 65% up to like 90%. Hmm. And so just having that peace of mind, knowing that the chemo worked, it was just great for me. So
were there times in all this where there was anger at God?
You know, yeah, I mean, I went through just so many emotions as I was going through treatments. It was honestly the darkest time in my life. Those 4 months that I was going through chemotherapy, just being so afraid all the time. Not like, I honestly, if I didn't have kids, I don't think that I would, this may sound morbid or whatever, but I don't think that I would really care about dying, because I know what comes next, and I know that it's not bad, and I know that it's actually great, you know, to go to the other side. But when you have kids depending on you, and a husband who loves you, who will be devastated if you leave, and people, you know, who need you, my fear stemmed from that, just knowing, you know, that if I leave, you know, what, just wondering what's going to happen to them. And so I was just constantly afraid and concerned about my kids. And the chemotherapy just does some pretty horrible things to your body and to your mind. And
well, it's poison for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
Right? As I understand
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it is. It's poison. I mean, it's killing your cells in your yeah. body. And so, anyhow, and so I think because I was so afraid all the time, I had a really hard time feeling the spirit. And one of my friends recently said something, because I mentioned that to her, and she said, well, that's because fear and faith can't coexist. And I don't know if I agree completely with that, but for some reason, I just had the hardest time feeling the spirit and being comforted during that time. But there were a couple of times that I went to the temple, because I actually started going to the temple every week as I was going through that, because it was really the only way I felt like I could get through it. Mm-hmm. But there were a couple times, a couple of experiences that I had that were just so spiritually just moving to me, that like I could not deny the existence of God and of the Savior, because I felt their presence, you know, and I felt mm-hmm. just that, I don't know, I knew that they were there. And so in a lot of ways, it was the darkest time in my life, but it was also the greatest period of learning in my life, because I really learned to depend on Heavenly Father, and I learned to depend on the Savior and on the atonement, and on I gained a testimony of the atonement during that time in my life. And so, yeah, it was good and bad.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating how, you know, you always hear those things about sort of the humility or the taking you down to, you know, just the base.
Mm-hmm.
And then hearing you share that experience. I mean, that seems like that's what it is. It's like, all right, here we go, Sarah. Let's let's build this foundation for now, the rest of your life. Because not only the experience that you have spiritually from that, but also physically, those are things that now will define you, your children, and for forever.
Yeah. It's definitely not something that I would want to go through again, but at the same time, I am glad that I went through it. So, and I learned so much from it, and I took away more than what I lost. So,
and everything's good, right? We're
yes,
good.
Yes. So at this point, it's been almost 5 years cancer free still. And my doctor says if I can make it to 5 years, I'm cured, just because of the type of cancer I had. If it does come back, it would be in the first 3 to 5 years. And so.
Does that get scary, though? Like every time you have to go to a checkup, it's like.
Whoa. Yeah, I have so much anxiety. Every time I have to go for my 6 month checkup, I just, my heart's just like pounding. And, you know, you walk into that office where you had poison, you know, put in your body, and you're just like, yeah, I hate going to the doctors. And just the fear of, are they going to find something, or, you know, but it's luckily it's always turned out fine. And so when I first found out, I forgot to mention this too, you know, my husband gave me a blessing that night. My dad came over and he and my husband gave me a blessing, and they promised me that I would be able to raise my children. And so the time that I was going through my treatments and just feeling really discouraged and afraid, I just clung to that, you know, mm-hmm. I just clung to that promise. And it was really hard sometimes to have faith in it.
Right.
And
I'm not feeling that blessing right now.
Yeah,
this doesn't seem like
there were so many times when I literally felt like I was dying just from the effects of the chemo, or from, because my heart was like, some of the chemo that they gave me made my heart just do all sorts of crazy things. And I thought that I was going to die of heart failure. And it was just, I had to wear a heart monitor for a couple of weeks. And so there was just so many little things that just made me feel like there's no way I'm going to survive this, you know. But yeah, amazingly, I did. There were a lot of miracles along the way. So,
do you share that experience with your kids?
Oh yeah, yeah. We talk about it, and in fact, my 9-year-old got up in sacrament meeting this last Fast Sunday, and he was very, very brief about it. All he said was, you know, that he knows that Heavenly Father has helped us through some tough times, and so yeah, they know. We talk about it. They know how I was healed, and I'm hoping that that's something that, you know, as they grow older, that that's something that will help them have faith, you know, and so just.
I think sometimes parents would shy away from sharing that because, you know, with kids, you don't want to scare them or anything like that. But I think that's such a vital conversation, like you say, to help buoy up their faith as they go, look, Mom had this and, you know, God promised she'd be okay and she's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, And it, I think, helps them to see that, you know, they don't need to be afraid, because God has helped us and he will continue to help us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in any challenge that we face as a family, we can kind of go back to that. Remember when Heavenly Father helped us with that? Well, he can help us with this too. So.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Not awesome that you got breast cancer, but in the grand scheme of things,
the lessons
I can just
from
see
it.
That quote coming away from it. Yeah. Anyway, so I want to talk a little bit more about the book.
Okay.
Because we get approached by a lot of people who say, yeah, I've written a book and would you like to have me come on? And quite honestly, I don't do that with everyone.
Hmm.
But the story of Porcelain Keys, although haven't read it, I'll be, you know, forthright with you as far as that goes, to me just seemed like, I guess just something that I can kind of relate to, that courage of a young individual. But I don't know. And maybe it was just for the conversation that we could have about other parts of your life that we've kind of delved into.
Mm-hmm.
But Porcelain Keys has been out now for how long?
So it came out February 11th, so almost 2 months.
Oh, so it's
it's new release. Yeah.
And how's it going?
It's going really good. I've had a lot of really good reviews, and people are really loving it and sharing it with family and friends. And so, it's going really good so far.
Geared towards a young adult fiction?
Young adult, but older women are also enjoying it. In fact, I had two women in their 80s at my church come up to me this last Sunday and tell me how much they loved it. In fact, a man in our ward, who's an older man, read it, and he came up to me and told me how much he loved it. And so I think that it appeals to a wide audience, but it's, you know, it's about a 17-year-old girl, so I guess that's why it's categorized as a young adult. So,
Just crazy to see your name in a printed book and that feeling of accomplishment.
Yeah, the first delivery I got from Cedar Fort was my advanced reader copies, you know, and I just seeing that printed book, you know, of this story that I've slaved over for so long. And it was just, I honestly hugged it to my chest and was just like, oh, it made me so happy and just very fulfilling. And, you know, it's a dream come true pretty much. You know, I've always wanted to write a book ever since I can remember. And so just having it happen is a great feeling. So.
Which I think is another great example to your kids to be able to say, you know what, mom's always thought about this. And just because I have you guys around, you know, I mean, there's probably some sacrifice, I would bet, in order to have that book be written. But to be able to say to your kids, you know what, this is something that I always wanted to do. I didn't know how it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. You guys came along and I love you, but I knew that this was something that needed to be a part of me as well.
Yeah.
And that seems to be, you know, for me, something that I have really kind of grabbed onto is so many times we feel like we have to choose. It either has to be motherhood or it has to be, you know, or it has to be working in the workplace. There's no way that those two could meld, or, you know, it's either music or accounting.
Right.
You know, there can't be a musical accountant. For some reason.
Yeah. In fact, there's a couple of characters in my book that do multiple things, because that's really how people are. We have different interests and we have different things that we're good at. And so I think that it would be a waste for all of us to just focus on one thing, because we are all capable of so many different things. And for me, I think that I was a better mother because I was able to have that creative outlet. Because as I mentioned, you know, I was struggling for a while with postpartum depression, and I didn't even realize it at the time. You know, just looking back, I can see that I was, but as soon as I started writing again, and as soon as I started, you know, taking that small time for myself to do something that I enjoyed, it filled my well, you know, and it made me a better mother. It made me so that I had more to give to them because I was doing something that also fulfilled me. So,
and from a religious aspect too, God gives you talents and he wants you to use them.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I mean, he didn't go, you know, this is the, you know, I'm going to give you this talent. Don't do anything with it. Here you go. I mean, there's very much of that.
Yeah. And there does have to be a balance. You know, I can see how someone might, you know, totally neglect their kids all day so that they can, you know, pursue their interests and increase their talents. But there does need to be a balance. When I first started writing it, I wrote after my kids went to bed, or I would get up early in the morning because there was no way that I could work on it when they were awake. You know, kids are, especially toddlers.
Mom.
Yeah. You can't finish a train of thought. So it had to be quiet. And I just did it when they were sleeping. And even now, they're 9, 7, and 5, and I still have to either, you know, do it on the weekend when my husband can watch them, or I'll again get up earlier. I can't do the staying up late as much as I used to, but I'll do mornings now. So, but yeah, there just has to be a balance. So,
There's a few questions we ask everyone that steps into the cultural hall, Sarah. So I'm going to do the same to you. Do you have a calling in your ward right now? If so, what is it?
Yes, I am activity days. I do activities with the primary girls.
Cool. If you could pick one for yourself, what would you pick? Or you can create one if there isn't one out there that you would pick.
So this may sound crazy to some people, but I would love to work in the nursery because
that does sound crazy to me.
It wasn't my, you know, something I would want to do when I had little kids, but now that my youngest is 5, I kind of miss the little toddlers and the babies, and I would like to spend some time with them. And so, yeah, I think nursery would be fun.
Yeah. What is your favorite part of your faith?
I think I love having a belief system that helps me make sense of everything. Not just things that are going on in my own life, but things that are going on in the world. You know, there's a lot of really scary things going on in the world, and mm-hmm. just to be able to have that eternal perspective, you know, no matter what you're going through or no matter what you see going on around you, you can see things in a perspective that where you can still have peace, you know, just like I said, you can make sense of things.
The name of the book is Porcelain Keys. We've been visiting with Sarah Beard. Sorry. For some reason that just sounded weird as I said it like that. You can get the book online.
Yeah, it's on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble. And I think it's in most Deseret Books. And I just saw it on Siegel. I don't know if it's in their stores or not. But yeah, online is probably the easiest way to get it. So you don't have to go hunting for it.
So you can just Google. There's this new website called Google that people can just search Porcelain Keys and be able to pick it up right there.
Yeah.
Sarah Beard, thank you so much for stepping here in the Cultural Hall. We hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you aren't healthy enough to listen this week, you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety, that you'll be able to take these things into your daily life. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row.